you made some money then. The station was finally making money because you're able to bill all this, all these great hours of radio product, and that had to have made the investors or the owners take a second look at what was going on there.
Yeah. I've told you this, Tom, and I think you're prompting me, because I'll tell you it again if not. But I still remember the day that the station manager came in and said, well, we got the ratings, and I hope you're satisfied. He said, you know that the station is structured in such a way that the towers are held in a trust for the children of the owner. And the physical real estate of the station is held in another group, and then the license is held by another group. He said, we are now making so much money that we can't hide it for tax shelter purposes anymore. And it's going to require a lot of work by our lawyers to figure out what to do with this money. I hope you're satisfied. And I was.
That's great. Well, and with that being said, you make money, but then... You're on the radar now. Now other stations now are coming after you now. Now they're trying to change formats, and this once you make money, you got to make more money. So how did things change? And once things became profitable, once things once you took this underground progressive rock, which no one thought was going to work, and you had full freedom to do what you wanted to do, did things get a little bit more restricted then? Because now, at this point, we're talking mid-70s, the album rock format, it was catching on now.
It was changing from a free-flowing underground approach to being more defined.
Mm-hmm.
The way that the society works, the way that the commercial world works, is you can't have anything that's really free-floating. It has to be shaped. It has to be defined. It has to be controlled.
Right.
So one of the first things they did was they changed the image from underground to progressive rock.
Which sounds
safer.
It's
easier to sell a progressive rock format to a bank than an underground station, especially if there are street demonstrations against the war going on.
This is 1970s, and anything underground, this is the age of the SLA. I mean, this is the age of a lot of anything underground could be...
Progressive rock was a lot less dangerous sounding.
Right.
That brought consultants, and when you got consultants, you got restricted playlists, and you had liner cards where people were told what to say and how long they could talk between records.
Yeah, and it's an inside radio TV thing to talk about consultants, and it's joked a lot on broadcast, but consultants weren't new, and any business, I think, that consultants come in and try to make what you're doing more efficient and make more money. So I don't think there's very few industries that have not been affected by consulting. And there's consultants who listen to the show, and I'm sure do a great job. But let's look at this, though. Is you had unfeathered freedom, just to don't lose money. Now the consultants come in, and now people from New York or Los Angeles are coming in here and saying, wait a second now. You kind of invented this format, but now we're going to come tell you how to do it better.
Other stations also were trying to compete with us at that time.
Right.
KDWB was doing, at least in the evening, they were doing kind of a progressive rock format. They had an approach. And at one point, Tony Glover was doing an all-night show that was astonishingly good.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I think WLOL, sometimes there gets to be this call letter soup. There are so many stations with different call letters, and sometimes they change, and they change formats.
Well, and this is, KDWB was still only AM at that point. This is before they purchased 100 or U100. So they were, they were competing on your FM band with...
It was tough to compete against an FM station.
Right.
I'd walk into a stereo store or a record store, a component store, and they'd have our station on as the demo. So you'd walk in and there'd be a wall of speakers and there'd be your station. That was very, very cool.
Let's take a break here. When we come back, we'll talk more about the latter half of the 70s and consulting and all the antics that happened over at KQRS. I'm with Alan Stone. This is Tom Osmond on KLBB Club 1220.
Into the still of a Midwestern dawn, a new force took flight from 92 on the FM band. Heavily laden with music, moving like a giant star cruiser. She tracks homeward through a sea of stars, leaving a slipstream of sound in her wake. This is Minnesota's best album rock. KQRS 92 FM, the Superstar Cruiser.
Okay, I don't want to frighten anyone. This is not that station. This is KLBB Club 1220 Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond with my guest, Alan Stone of KQRS Radio.
And that was the audio from a video clip.
That was a commercial that played in 1978. And I asked for this when I first found this tape on a random video. And you told me that was a year's promotion budget in 30 seconds.
It was. As I recall, that was produced by a company, I think, out of Chicago. And it was virtually the same commercial. It was done on a number of radio stations.
Well, you know what?
Throughout the country. Why
don't we listen to that same commercial? This is what I found fascinating about this was I posted this to tcmedianow.com. Within about a minute, someone had found the Chicago version of this commercial. And let's listen to the Chicago version.
Oh, it's a surprise.
Into the still of a Chicago dawn, a new force took flight from 95 and a half on the FM band.
Wow.
Heavily laden with music. Moving like a giant star cruiser, she pierces the audio spectrum, beaming her shockwave through a sea of stars, leaving a slipstream of sound in her wake. This is the Superstar Cruiser, WMET, 95 and a half FM, Chicago's sound encounter.
You know, you think you're getting this individual commercial, you know, made for your audience and made for your community, and, you know, lo and behold, they just changed the voiceover.
The funny thing about it was that we were, if not the top-rated station, one of the top-rated stations in the city, at least in our format, we were number one. And the station management decided that they needed to spend a lot of money for that kind of a feel-good, self-promotional kind of thing. And they weren't sharing that kind of money with any of the announcers.
They weren't putting
that money into programming. Oh, they weren't, you know, it said it was kind of an odd, and the visual look to that TV spot was kind of a Star Wars theme. There was a Star Wars type cruiser coming through, and the staff was just dismayed.
Yes,
because that wasn't us.
No, it's a interesting divide. Even if you listen to some of these old clips on kind of where, you know, where things, you can tell when things are more corporatized than when they were originally. And the Superstar Cruiser era, we'll call it that, which is a lot of the promotions, a lot of the bumper stickers, T-shirts that you can still find lingering around on eBay. Or occasionally you go to the state fair, you see someone with one of these on. But it was a divide of what was the underground, we'll call it progressive, but the word progressive wasn't even right to use in the late 70s. And then it was called the Superstar. Was it Abrams that came in? And this is a consulting company that out of New York that came in. And
there was a consulting company by Lee Abrams and another guy. And they were very good at convincing radio station managers that they could replicate a successful a progressive rock format on just about any station. We went from a very large library that was dependent on the ability of the announcers to put together a program. I think they had a pretty restrictive playlist of maybe 1,200 songs.
And you weren't able to pick your own records anymore. You weren't
no,
able to
go.
No, they
came up in order.
You gave me one time, which was great. It was a playlist of the things you wrote down, and I can't picture. And you know, let's talk about the corporate stations today. Not you know KLAB, but stations that are owned by national conglomerates. I mean, no one could ever actually pick out their own, you know, album and play that. And that's kind of where this all started. You know, you made some money, you found something that worked, and changed a format. But again, someone wanted to do what you're doing and do it better, and then make sure everyone did it the way that they wanted you to do it.
That's the way it works.
Let's listen to some more audio from, this is from 1977.
Oh, hey, Carole King. That's from the Simple Things album, and this is KQRS music from Stillwater coming up in a minute. This week, The Tale of the Whale features the country rock of David Allen and the Opal City Poker Chips. And they're making music down at Moby Dick's Tale of the Whale this week. The Tale of the Whale now features your favorite live music every night of the week, along with the usual Moby Dick's cocktails. Don't forget Moby Dick's new weekly Budweiser Beer Bust, 35 cents for a can of Bud, every Sunday from 6 to 9 p.m., along with free food. Moby Dick's between 6th and 7th on Hennepin downtown. And the folks at Moby say, thanks for coming down.
I guess it's Alan Stone, and don't go down to Moby Dick's. It's been gone for 25 years, and maybe that may not be a bad thing, actually.
A little late to the party.
Well,
yeah, but 35-cent beer. Man, they had some tough bouncers, let me tell you. That was a tough room.
There's some great, if you're interested in history of Minneapolis or history of even broadcasting, there's some great Facebook pages out there. One is Old Minneapolis, and they have a lot of great pictures of Hennepin Avenue from that era, from, we'll call it that Moby Dick's era, that the blocky was known as what do you want to call it, a bastion of partiers, we'll call it that, that would come down there and drink several 35-cent beers. But there's some great images and some great clips occasionally you can find on Old Minneapolis. And also,
is that oldminneapolis.com?
You know, it's on a Facebook page. You type in Old Minneapolis in Facebook, and it's a fan page, and people post pictures and postcards and things from that era. And then also, I think Moby Dick's actually has a Facebook page also, which again has some photos, and it's a important part of we'll call it the underground progressive history of this town, because there was a lot of some music came out of there, and a lot of stories and a lot of police calls too might have come out of there. But
yeah, there were. That was quite a block, Block E, that had Club 620. And some of those joints went back to Prohibition era,
right,
era times, and had some pretty seamy stories about them. And there were some back rooms where things were still going on during the 70s.
Was there a lot of KQRS promotions out in Block E? Did you?
Say that again.
Was there some KQRS promotions ever at Block E, where you meet your favorite KQ DJ out at Moby's and come out and have a 35-cent beer?
No.
Okay, that's good. So let's talk a little bit about you left KQRS, and what made you leave radio forever the first time?
I left radio forever several times. 1980, I had done it, you know.
Mm-hmm, right.
I'd done freeform radio. I'd done all sorts of, I'd done everything I wanted, and it was becoming more and more, my options were becoming more and more constrained by outside programmers.
Right.
And I wanted to do other things in my life, you know. It was like, gee, I loved radio, but I wanted to try some other things. So I left radio forever in 1980.
And then you left, then you came back to radio. 5 years later. Really.
5 years later, I ran into Wally Walker at a bar, and he said,
"I thought it was a library.
It could have been a library."
Okay, all right.
And he said, "You know, your name still shows up on our surveys. You ever think about coming back?" And I said, "Well, not really." He said, "Well, you talk to Dave Hamilton, who was the program director at KQ at that time.
Up until about a month ago, he was program director."
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's no longer program director.
So I talked to Dave, and he said, "Well, yeah, come on back. We'll give you a Sunday afternoon show or two," and what the heck. Also, at the same time, Cities 97 was just really getting started back then, and I liked their format better than the KQ format,
right,
because at that time KQ had been...
Well, their format was different. It was the same music you had programmed in 1970. They were doing... They were doing
kind of a greatest hits version of it, and there was, but it was great because there was a young guy who was just kind of getting rolling here in town with a show at KQ,
mm-hmm,
a guy named Tom Bernards, and Tom was doing the morning show there. Of course, I didn't want to take anything away from him at all.
And he
so anyway,
and you knew him from the old days too. You knew when he was a guy trying to get into radio, and he knocking a lot of doors, and you being one of them.
Tom had a real tough time making it. We're very proud of him for the great success that he's had. But I went over to Cities 97.
Okay.
And was there for several years. Then I ended up as the music director and then program director at KTCJ, which was their jazz station.
And that was on AM, right?
That was an AM station.
So you did Cities 97 and KTCJ for 12 years?
See, I was at KQ for 11.
Right.
Then I left for 5 years, and then I came back and did Cities 97 and KTCJ, their sister station. And then came back to KTCZ for a couple of years. And then I left Radio Forever again in 1996. And then in about 2000, I started volunteering and giving time to the Minnesota State Services for the Blind, the Talking Book Network, doing newscasts and doing production for them and audiobooks for them. So after doing commercial work for a long time, I decided to give back to the community. And so I volunteered for the State Services for the Blind as a reader and producer for several years.
And my guest is Alan Stone. You told me a funny story before the show started. You actually did the fashion report for the service, correct? You were doing the what's news for men's fashion for the blind.
That's right.
That's it's a service that needs to happen.
It was an important show to do because people tend to have preconceived ideas about what it means to be sightless or to be impaired, have a vision impairment. And that doesn't mean that people are not interested in what's going on. There are a lot of successful people who have vision problems, or maybe they are blind. They may be attorneys. They may be teachers. And to arbitrarily decide that, oh, gee, well, they wouldn't be interested in knowing what's happening with technology or fashion or news is totally wrong. They're just like everyone else. It's just they have a vision problem.
And you're still doing production. You have a business.
Yes, I do.
Talk a little bit about that and fun projects you've done.
I have an audiobook production company called Holton House Audio.
And what does Holton House Audio do?
We record and produce audiobooks.
And a couple of projects you've worked on,
The most recent one is the audio version of the book by Captain Mark Weber called Tell My Sons, which is an amazing story. We also did Kevin Kling's The Dog Says How with Kevin doing his own reading, which is wonderful. We did Eric Severide's book Canoeing with the Cree.
That's a great book.
Which is considered to be one of the 10 best Minnesota history books ever done. Still sells well.
And one that I like, the Oli and
And we did a fundraiser. We were asked to do a fundraiser for with the Oli and Lena group out of Cambridge, Minnesota. It was a fundraiser for a local band, for a high school band. So we set up and we recorded in a community center in Cambridge, and we recorded one night a live performance of Oli and Lena, and it was just a great bit of Americana.
Well, how Minnesota is that, though? I mean, that pretty much is Minnesota, and every gas station, every stop from here to International Falls.
It's a hot dish on a stick.
Exactly.
Deep fried.
Let's listen to another, because I want to get another clip here before we have to go here. Let's listen to Alan Stone doing a read in 1978.
KQ92 is Minnesota's best album rock. KQRS-FM, KQRS-AM, Golden Valley, the Superstar Cruiser.
Steely Dan on KQRS. Aerosmith's going to be appearing in concert at the St. Paul Civic Center October 14th, presented by Casablanca Productions. For complete concert information and whenever you want to know what's happening with music in town, you can call the KQ information line at 546-2022. Try it again. Weather for the Twin Cities. Occasional rain and drizzle with a chance of some thunderstorms through the
Saturday. Do you miss radio at all? Do you miss doing a daily show?
No, well, when you do something and you love it, yeah, there's always a special place.
Right.
But for me, I always become so consumed with whatever it is that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I know that if I were to do even a one-day show or a weekend show, it would consume me for so much of my time that would be my real focus. And I feel I already gave.
You've mentioned that to me before. I've asked the question before, but I want to ask it on the air. In three stations, four stations, you know, what's been, you think, your, you know, the best thing you've done in radio? If you could name one thing or name one contribution you made or what you got out of it.
I can't I can't tell you that, Tom. We did a great thing with a lot of good people at KQ.
Right.
That was an astonishing thing that happened for several years. Some of the jazz programming I did, I'm very, very proud of, even though it was never successful in a big commercial sense, because jazz is a small format. But I'm very proud of that. And I was on the advisory board for KBEM for a couple of years. Which is the Minneapolis School Board's radio station, and they're a jazz format.
Mm-hmm. No, it's. I appreciate you telling me these great stories. The thing I think is great is, you know, the barriers you changed with bringing in different types of announcers, bringing in different types of music.
It was fun. We really did make a change in the face of broadcasting with that staff.
And some of your hires have gone on to great, great fame. One person that I can't remember his name now. He did the commercials for, was it for Audi or for Ford? Who was the name?
Harlan Saperstein.
That's right. Okay. And he did great national fame as an announcer. And he came to KQRS to do afternoons, right?
We hired Harlan as a part-time announcer. He came in. He did an audition for us, and I said, "We'll hire you if you don't change your name." I love the name. So many announcers change. They have radio names.
Well, this is great. Alan Stone of KQRS City 97. You can listen to his voice on radiotapes.com or check out tcmedianow.com with some of the videos we played today. I am Tom Osmond. This is Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB Club 1220.